Welcome in to Pond Ain't Easy, baby. I'm here with the man, the myth, the legend, the godfather is in the house. Woo-woo! I'm your co-host, Cassio. How are you, sir?
Cassio, are you ready to get this party started?
I'm ready, man.
This is the first episode. I am so excited. I've been sitting at home medicating myself all day waiting just for this.
Medicating yourself. Okay, cheers.
That's a nice.
Cheers to everybody medicating themselves.
Well, you seem to be medicating yourself a little different than the way I am, but hey, long as you get there, we're fine.
All right, look, Pod Ain't Easy, thank you for joining us, man. We appreciate you joining the Ad-Free Shows family. Every month, we're going to do a month-by-month retrospective of your career, a long career, so hopefully we're going to be here a long time because you had a storied career, sir, a Hall of Fame career with the WWE and beyond. I'm excited. Are you excited to tell everybody behind the scenes of The Godfather?
I just hope that we're not going to be edited too much because, man, my Lord, I mean, I'm not just the pretend Godfather. I'm the Godfather, so I hope they're ready, man, because some of these stories, they might be like, I don't believe he just said that. Oh, my God, I don't believe he just said that. So be prepared. Be prepared, but be careful what you ask me.
We are going to be excited.
Answer.
That's what we need. That's what everybody at Ad Free Shows wants. I can't wait to talk to you because I've heard some of these stories, not a lot of Papa Shango stories from my friends here that I work with at Ad Free Shows, but a lot of Godfather stories from our buddies, Kyoto, Nick Patrick, Road Dogg, and beyond. So I can't wait to hear your side of some of these stories. But we're going to start at the very beginning. Mr. Charles Wright, now you stop me if I say something wrong or if you want to chime in. You're trained by Larry Sharp at the Monster Factory, correct?
Okay, yes.
And then you are noticed by a gentleman, Scott Norton, and other wrestlers. Scott, do you remember one of your first guys that noticed you wanted to get you to the next place? Tell me what it is.
That's a whole story in itself, but they were filming a movie here in Vegas. I was working at a strip club called The Crazy
Catch,
and they were filming Over the Top, which is a Sylvester Stallone arm wrestling picture. Scott Norton was
in that movie.
Scott Norton was in that. If he was actually at the bar, to be go back that far, I'm not sure. I haven't seen him in so long. I should ask him. But I think he did come by my bar. But he was in that movie, and some other wrestlers were in that movie. Back then, you're a bartender, bouncer, doorman, manager. You're everything in one. And I was just a monster back then. And they're like, dude, you should get into wrestling. And I'm like, I don't really want to do that. You know, I'm not a big wrestling fan. You know, when I grew up, in the 70s, when I grew up, roller derby was bigger than wrestling, and I'm from the Bay Area. So, I mean, you ask me roller derby questions, I could answer them. And so I'm like, I don't know if I want to do that. And then they go like this, and like, well, and at the time, I'm a biker. I'm like a real biker. And so at the time, they go, well, this guy, Bam Bam Bigelow. I'm like, yeah, I know him. The dude's got tattoos all over his head. They go, well, he made $1 million last year. And I went, wrestling? That's what got me into wrestling.
Yeah, you were like,
that's what
green.
Got me into wrestling, right there.
You like the green, no matter what it is. Money, substances, whatever.
Yeah. I acted like the crazy-ass wrestler anyway, and my friends were telling me, dude, you might as well get paid for being what you are.
I heard you're, what are you then? I heard you're like 6'6", 330, mohawk, tattoos, the whole deal, right?
I'm legitimate 6'5". I probably wrestled between my career, probably between 300 and 325. I probably stayed there. I think Kama came in a little heavy one time, but I stayed around 300 pounds. Godfather was 300, 305.
Are you rocking when they see you in Vegas from the top? You got the mohawk and the tats. You're looking fly, right?
No, man. No, we shaved all that off, though, man.
So when you decide, now, all right,
I can still grow an afro, actually.
Can you?
I like to keep it clean, man. Yeah, yeah.
Oh no, Jesus took the wheel right here, boy. There ain't nothing coming back on mud.
Oh man, I shaved this morning. Tomorrow I'll have like a shadow everywhere. It's always what you don't want, you got, you know?
Yeah, that's it. So when you start your first getting into the wrestling business, that's Memphis?
Yes.
Soul Taker,
wow. You know, there's a whole story behind that though, because we got to go back to going to wrestling school. When I did go to wrestling school, I was there for I'm going to be completely honest. When I went there, I've always been really good at picking up women because I've always worked in strip clubs. So I've always had the gift of gab. All right. So when I went there, dude, all I'm doing is I'm hanging out all night in strip clubs. I'm hooking up with chicks and stuff. I get back to my apartment that I had like at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. I sleep all day. Wrestling school. If I was there 3-4 months, I might have went to wrestling school 3-4 times. Maybe. The rest of the time, brother, I swear to you, I'm hanging in strip clubs. Larry Sharp calls me one day and he goes, hey, you got to come in today. Jerry Lawler wants to take a look at you. Mind you, bro, I know nothing. I think one day I learned how to lock up and that's it. That's all I know about wrestling. I've been here 3 months and I had been in strip clubs the whole time. And so Jerry, I get in the ring with Jerry Lawler, right? And he goes, throw a punch. He goes, throw a kick. He goes, he tells me what to do. And he goes, well, I can work with you. So he hires me. Okay. All I know in wrestling, bro, is a hit to lock up. And I don't even do that well. And so my very first match ever, not knowing anything about wrestling, not one thing about wrestling. I thought it was a half-ass shoot, okay? I wrestled Jerry in Memphis, Tennessee on a Monday night, which is big back then. That's a big thing. I wrestled him on a Monday night, Memphis, Tennessee. I beat him in the middle, 1-2-3. I win the CWA, the Memphis title, heavyweight title. My first match, not knowing anything.
Really? So according to the internet, which, you know, the internet's always true, you had a October 4th, to tell everybody where we're at, October 14th, 89, you had a Memphis TV show with Larry Sharp, like we said, Monster Factory. He's your manager and mouthpiece. And then a week later, October 23rd, you defeat Lawler for the USWA Unified World Title. You're a week into the business, dog.
Dude, wait. I got to go out of the picture for just 1 second. Not just 1 second. Because a friend of mine just sent me this picture. Larry Sharp only worked with me 1 weekend. And then he couldn't come back and forth. So they gave me a manager named Nate the Rat. Hang on, the picture's...
Nate the Rat.
Yesterday. This is a picture of the Soul Taker and Nate the Rat with the title.
Gosh.
I just won it. But is that crazy?
The mohawk and everything.
And Nate the Rat, the first week I was there, I had a black mohawk. And that guy, Nate, was a taxi driver. He goes, we got to do your hair red. So he's the one. I went to his apartment. And he dyed my hair red. But that's it. Not knowing anything about wrestling, that's it.
That's pretty amazing. Hey, when you're there, it's 80. First of all, when you first go to the Monster Factory, you said Norton might have been there. But who was the official guy that said something to you and you were like, you know what, I'm going to the Monster Factory?
It was the fact I can't go back and say exactly who it was. I can just tell you
a bunch of people
that they hooked me because I was a biker. Bam Bam Bigelow was known to be a biker, and I'm like, well, if he went there, dude must be pretty cool. So I'll go there just because the dude was a biker. And at the time, I was a biker, and not no weekend biker. I was a real biker at the time. And so the fact that Bam Bam was known to be a biker, I'm like, well, if he can. Because, see, back then, tattoos weren't really big, man. That's a long time ago. And tattoos weren't really over. It was still an oddity. And so, I mean, like, I'm like, well, and that's the main reason is because Bam Bam had tattoos. I'm like, well, this guy was, they must be cool with tattoos at this place. Because a lot of places weren't cool with tattoos back then.
Are you, were you from Vegas? How'd you end up in Vegas?
I am from Northern California, a place called Sunnyvale, which is now called Silicon Valley.
Yeah, yeah.
And I played football at UNR, University of Nevada, Reno. And then I had to leave school.
Okay.
I was playing football there, right? And then I got hurt and I blew out my knee. And then when I blew out my knee, I started going to strip clubs. I started not going to school. I started going to strip clubs. I started bodyguarding strippers on the weekends. Not going to school, not going to the gym. Back then, for whatever reason, man, I've never been a bully in my life. Have I ever been a bully? In fact, I stick up for people. But back then, I was quick to hit. I was very mean. Very quick to hit. And so he said the wrong thing to me. It wasn't like, what, motherfucker? It wasn't like that. It was, wow. You know, and so.
At first, ask questions later.
I'm going to be complete. I didn't mean to cut you off, but I'm going to be completely honest. I got thrown out of school for fighting. And so then a dude's like, a lot of people don't know this, but I listen to old, like, mostly 70s country music. I'm really into that. And so I went back home, and the rodeo, the NFR rodeo used to be in Oklahoma City every year. And so all of a sudden, bam, it was moved to Vegas. And I wanted to go to the rodeo all my life. And so I came to Vegas. I was staying in a hotel. I'm like, hey, dude, where's the best place to go drink? And they're like, well, this club here, you pay $25. It's all you could drink, and they'll pick you up in a limo. Bam. So I go to this club, and the manager comes up to me and goes, is your name Bear? And I'm like, yeah. He goes, dude, I was on a recruiting trip, and you got in a fight with this dude on the third floor of this dormitory. You picked a guy. You opened the window. You threw him out the second story floor. He goes, dude, I've been talking about you all my life, and you're right here. I'm like, yeah, that was me, man. And he goes, dude, my dad owns Topless Club. His name's Jack Gilardi. He owns Topless Clubs in Vegas. The guys are making $300-$400 a day. And back then, that was big money, man, in like 82, 83. And I'm like, how much? I went home, told my wife at the time, hey, we're moving to Vegas. Moved. I had a Harley, a 55 Ford pickup, a Harley. We had just bought an 83 Ford Mustang 5.0 convertible when they just came out.
Hell yeah.
Sold the house, moved to Vegas. The day I got here, I started working in strip clubs.
You're how old?
That's 84.
So you're yellow. You're super young.
Yeah, man. Well, I'm not young.
No, in 84, how old were you in 84?
In 84, well, I was born in 61, so 80, you know.
Oh, you're super young then. Yeah, you're super young, yeah. So you're,
yeah, I mean, yeah.
Then you end up in Vegas. We talk about you're now in Memphis. You won the title right out of the gate. When did they tell you? They tell you the night before or the night of? During the match, when did they tell you you're going to win the damn title?
They told me the day of, and they wouldn't let me keep the title. The short time that I had it, they would bring it to me, and then I'd never see it again. They were so afraid of me. There was this big black dude with tattoos. that chews tobacco and listens to country music. And they didn't know what the fuck to think of me.
I didn't know what to do with you. See, like we said, October 23rd, the Soul Taker defeats Lawler, USWA Unified World Title. 2 weeks later, you're in a cage match with Lawler, and he wins it back. And while you're in Memphis...
Cheap bastard, he threw some fire on.
While you're in Memphis, you would meet for the first time and become friends with a guy named Master of Pain that we would all now know as The Undertaker. How did you meet Taker?
Yeah. Well, after I was done with Lawler, you got to realize that, I know nothing about wrestling. I'm athletic enough that I can do what Jerry tells me to do. So Jerry's calling the whole match. I'm just doing what he, put your chest up, this, you're selling too much, yell to people. I'm just doing what he tells me to do. And so once I was done, now they didn't know what to do with me. So they said, we're going to bring this kid in, this big redheaded kid. He's been in the business about a year, so he's got more experience than you. Taker was driving from Dallas to Memphis. So when he got there, it was time for us to work. So I never had a chance to talk to him. And all he knew was I was a little green. Well, we go out there and have a very physical match because I don't know what I'm doing, and he doesn't know that I don't know what I'm doing. And it ends up him telling me to throw him outside the ring. He tells the story all the time, but he basically grabs a chair, hits me over the head with this chair as hard as you can hit a person. Kind of, then I look up, knocks me down. I look at him, he goes, bro, we could do this the easy way or we could do this the hard way. And I said, how about the easy way? And he says, I was so happy you said the easy way. They put us together as a tag team after that. And shortly after that, he went to WCW. And then I went to Germany for like 8 months and worked with Otto Bonds.
Okay, so that's 1990. You're the Death Express, right?
Yes, the Death Express. But we look like kind of a ripoff Road Warrior gimmick.
Okay. And you're the Soul Taker, and he is the Punisher, right?
No, he's the Master of Pain at that time.
Oh, he was still Master of Pain. Is that the first chair shot you ever took?
Oh, yeah. Well, in a wrestling, but not in a bar. I'm taking a trip.
Not in a bar.
Dude, I've been in some rough places, man. Like,
how does a wrestling chair shot compare to a strip club chair shot?
Well, the wrestling one, you know it's coming. Dude, I've been in so many. Being the only black biker tattooed dude, I've been in so many bar fights and just like roadhouse type of shit. You wouldn't believe me, man. You wouldn't believe it.
Yeah, if you can say it coming, you can prepare. You just, it's the one you don't say coming, right?
It's coming, it hurts.
For the next couple years, you went to Germany? What were you doing in Germany?
When I went there, listen to the people that were there. Scott Hall, Owen Hart, Chris Benoit, Dave Taylor, Fit Finley, Salvatore Maloma, PM News, PM News, Otto Vons, Eddie Steinblock, Rambo. Those were the people that were on tour. And you'd be like in Hamburg, Germany for 90 days. Then you go to Dusseldorf. Then you go to Dortmund. Then you go to Bremen. And you're on this tour. And it's you wrestle in the same building like for 30 days. And then you move to the next one. They have caravans. They call them caravans, which is trailers. And you're following like the Oktoberfest. So there's like a circus atmosphere where you're staying, and you stay in the trailers. But I never stayed in the trailers, but that's a whole other story.
All right, so you're the Death Express, you're working with Undertaker, and then the next couple of years, you start floating around. You've got a lot of things going on. So I want to ask you, at first, you jump to the NAWA in South Carolina, and you team up with a guy we've heard of, Cowboy Bob Orton Jr. At that time, he was Baron Samedi. Is that right?
Yeah. Dude, they get me out there, and I was working as Soul Taker. They're like, well, you can't work as Soul Taker here. So we're going to call you, and I don't know if it's Baron Samedi or Baron Samedi, how you pronounce it right. The characters from the James Bond film named Live and Let Die, and that's where Papa Shango was created from that film. So all they tell me is, this dude's the African headhunter. And I'm like, what? So I show up like fucking chewing tobacco like Biker Bear, and they didn't know what to do with me. So they put me with Bob Orton, and Bob Orton was like my manager. I was there for only did like 2 TV tapings, and I was out of there because I was also working for Global and so doing some us. Yeah, but I was only there for like a couple TV tapings, and they were calling me Baron Samedi.
Okay.
Which is so funny because there, me and Papa Shango, who Baron Samedi is. But I just don't know if it's Baron.
I can't wait.
Or Baron Samedi.
Samedi. I will go Samedi. And then after you leave South Carolina, I know you go to Germany and Austria. Is that New Japan, though? Is that the promotion?
I want to say whichever one was Inoki's group, which I think is New Japan.
Yeah. And you're teamed up with a who's who.
Oh, man. That's because I was green, dude. They had to team me up with people because I was green. At that point, I had been in the business a year, and now I'm main eventing that I'm wrestling with Stan Hansen and Bam Bam Bigelow and Terry Gore. I mean, Stan Hansen. I'm wrestling with these guys not knowing shit. But I was so different at the time that they put me out there, man. But believe me, I learned the hard way, bro. My very first match, I think I was 10. I was with Bam Bam and Stan, right? I think Stan was there. It was, if not Stan, it was, oh, no, it was. It was Bam Bam and Vader. And we were a tag team.
Okay.
After the match, Bam Bam and Vader come to me. They're like, bro, you can't let these guys take you like that, man. If you don't stop them now, they're just going to poke you out. They're going to do this and that. You can't let these guys take liberties like they were. So they said, tomorrow you're wrestling whoever I was wrestling. They said, as soon as you lock up with this guy, you just jaw check him hard as you can. You knock him out. And they said, at that point, they'll respect you more. So, bam, I lock up with the guy and just whap, I crack him real hard. He goes, oh, okay, we work. And I swear that's how it went. I don't remember who the guy was. Then sorry for my racist fucking Japanese.
Hey, you heard it, not us. If that's what it sounded like, that's what it sounded
like. Quiet. He's like, okay.
What do you, what?
We work.
Are you Soul Taker? Are you Baron? What are you?
No, I was Soul Taker in Germany. Man, I was Soul Taker.
Okay. When did Rocky Las Vegas appear?
I got back from Japan. I was in Japan for like 2 tours. In 6 months, I was there 2 times. And then a guy by the name of Tokyo Joe booked me in, God rest his soul, he booked me in Germany for Otto Vons. And Otto Vons runs a 9-month promotion. And you would start in Austria, Wien, Graz, Seebottom, and then you would end up in Germany, and you'd be in Hanover, Bremen, Dortmund, and Düsseldorf. And you would stay in these towns. I like my German, Düsseldorf. And you would stay in these towns, man, for like 30 days.
Why is it there?
You'd stay in these towns for like 30 days. You'd wrestle in the same building every night. And they wrestled in rounds, like round 1, round 2, round 3. And so you didn't know if you were working or not till you got to the building, man. And it was pretty cool. Let me tell you who was there when I was there. Owen Hart, Chris Benoit, Fit Finley, Dave Taylor, Scott Hall, Rambo, PM News. Salvatore Bonomo, Gato Gypsy, those were the guys that were working. That's where I learned, because now you're wrestling in rounds. It's like old school wrestling, and you're working the crowd. And that's where I kind of learned there. And now you're working with people like Owen and Owen and Fit Finley and Dave Taylor. now they're teaching you stuff. So that's where I was kind of put through wrestling school, is working a journey with these guys.
Who are you? You're learning from all of them. You're being in the ring with them. Who are you vibing with? Like, who are you hanging out with when you're in Germany and Austria?
Okay, once again, I got to be honest. Once again. I think my wife's in the garage. This is way before her anything. My normal thing, this is going to sound bad, but hey, it's me. My normal thing was, I've always been good at talking with women. And so Dave Taylor spoke German. I didn't speak Deutsch. All right. So me and Dave, I swear to God, I would do this, bro. I would go to the club with my suitcase. And some guy, I was a big hit with the girls, man. And so I would hook up with some girl that didn't speak English. And Dave Taylor would fucking close the deal for me because he spoke English. And all I knew was, Otto, you have Otto? Oka? Otto, Otto? We go your place. We got Otto. And then I would stay with this chick for like, I would stay with her for like 2 or 3 weeks. And then I'd get tired of her and I'd go back to my caravan. And Scott Hall's caravan was next to me. And he's like, bro, you're fucking, oh, he just used to laugh at me, man. And then I'd go spit, because it was better that way, because now you're not in a trailer, you're staying with some girl, I'm driving their Mercedes around, they're feeding me, they're, oh, dude, that's safe. Bro, I learned a lot about wrestling, because I would go pick up Owen and Scott. I would have the girl's car, right? And I'd drive over and pick up everybody at the care. I'd pick up Scott Hall. I'd pick up Owen Hart. I'd pick up all these guys. And then I'd drop them back off and say, see you guys at the show. And I'd take off in the car.
So you're there late 80s, early 90s, right?
Maybe early, like 90.
That's what I was going to say. Correct me if I'm wrong. Summer of 91. You go back, you're the Soul Taker, and you have a run in global wrestling, right?
I don't know the year, but I did have a run in global wrestling, yes. And now I'm way more polished than when I left.
So let's go how good you are, because now we're at the debut in the WWF of Papa Shango. You got a few tryout matches in December of 91, if notes are correct.
You're already, notes are not correct. I had one tryout match in Arizona. Vince says, I want to see you work his heel. We're going to call you Sir Charles, because Charles Barkley was playing basketball there at the time at the arena in Phoenix that we were at.
Awesome.
He goes, and I want you to work heel. After the match, Vince hires me right away. He goes, you're hired. He goes, I'm going to put you on payroll. He says, but. He goes, you have a body of a monster, but you have a baby face. He goes, I have to find out something to do with that face of yours. And he goes, your face don't match your body. And so I sat at home for, I don't know how long, a short time that Vince called me. And I think it was Vince. He goes, it was Vince. And he goes, Charles, I want you to go rent the movie Live and Let Die. He goes, there's a voodoo character in there named either Baron Samedi or Baron Samedi. He goes, we're going to take off from this character. And he goes, and most importantly, I want you to learn that laugh, that, he says, I want you to learn the laugh of this dude. Okay? And that's where we got Papa Shango.
All right, time out. Before we get there, I want to get to this. Do you get the tryout because Taker worked with you in Memphis? Is that how you got the tryout?
Well, I'm sure. Yeah, of course. Hell yeah, I'm sure.
Okay. You just get a call from Vince or what? Like, what are you doing? You're in Memphis and Vince calls you? Tell me what happened.
Taker. I'm sure. I don't know. I don't remember who called me for the tryout. I might have been Bruce Pritchard. But I know Taker was fighting for me. And okay. Taker's like, hey, I'll take a look at my guy. You know, yeah, of course. I was like, Taker's had a lot of guys that he said take a look at that didn't get jobs.
Let's go back to your WWF trial matches. You're in, like you said, you're in Sir Charles territory, and you're coming out for a trial match. Do you know anybody in the locker room? Are you nervous? What? Tell me about that night of your tryout stuff.
I don't take your. I don't know. I'm not the nervous type of dude, bro. I'm not nervous at all. Never have been.
Okay.
What I can remember, no, man. Just no. I wasn't nervous. I just went out there and did my thing. And I don't.
Okay. Good.
Much. That's so long ago. I just don't remember, man. But I know that I wouldn't have been nervous because at that point I was kind of polished and I knew what I was doing. I could have matches with people now.
So, obviously, everybody's going to ask, you mentioned Vince. What's your first meeting with Vince like?
I get to Titan Towers, and Howard Finkel meets me. Howard Finkel. God rest his soul. Yeah. And Howard's like, okay, I'm going to help you out. He goes, are you hungry? And I'm like, no. He goes, well, it'll be a couple hours. Would you like to go work out? You can take a shower, then you can get something to eat, then we'll take you to meet Vince. I'm like, cool. So I was working out, and I don't remember who was there, but there was wrestlers in there that I knew who they were, and they were cool. I just don't remember exactly who. And I worked out, and then they went down, and we had something to meet, and then we went to Vince's office. All I can remember is him saying, us working out the name Papa Shango, and I worked out the Papa, and then it was he wanted to say Papa Shango. And I'm like, that sounds country, Papa Shango. I'm like, I want Papa Shango. And he goes, much better. And we worked that out. And I just remember him not laying anything out. I remember him just saying, what did he say? And he goes, we're going to put you out there and put the WWE wheels behind you and see where it goes. And it was something like that where he said, he didn't say you're going to be working with this guy. He just said, we're going to get behind you and see where it goes.
Vince tells you to watch Live and Let Die and watch the Baron character. When does the mention of face paint come in? Who has the idea of face paint?
Oh, of course. I mean, if you watch, apparently you haven't seen the movie.
No, but did he say you want the whole face paint, everything?
Yes. He says, we're going to take off from this character. And right away, they sent me design face paints and costumes. And right away, they were sending me stuff of costumes and face paints. And stats, I'm like, wow, this is wild. And yeah, and then they sent me to New Orleans for a while, and I met with a bunch of voodoo people, and we worked out all the symbols that I were wearing was real. Everything I was saying was real. And it was, I mean, we did a lot of research.
Wow.
And it was hard, man, because like I said at the time, I'm a biker. I know voodoo, man. And we worked on it hard, real hard. But, yeah, that wasn't no easy gimmick, man.
So now, February 1st, WWF Superstars 1992, the first mysterious vignette for Papa Shango debuts. You do the vignette. Where are you?
Oh, I don't remember, bro. I think we're in Florida, maybe. I think we're in Florida. And at that time, I think it was Florida. I think it was Tampa. If I'm not Fort Lauderdale or Tampa, they don't hold me to that, but I think it was Florida. And George Steele was in charge of my vignettes because that's what I'm one of
really?
The first people that they started to use green screens with because I was doing all type of wild voodoo stuff. But yeah, George the Animal Steele was in charge of all my vignettes.
Are you doing any creative input, or are you just, at this point, going with whatever they feed you?
Dude, I'm just doing the best with whatever they're running to me, and they're running a lot of crazy ideas at me and shit, and I just did the best. I just basically kept my mouth shut and did the best I could with what they told me to do.
All right, so did you know when the vignette aired February 1st, 1992, did you know 1 week later, you would be taking old Tonka, or did you know in timeline at all? You just knew we're going to do the vignette and see what happens.
Did the vignette to see what happens, man. I was just, you know, deep at the time. I mean, I'm really green to the business and stuff. I got Taker looking out for me and stuff, but I was just happy to be there, bro. And to say, what do you guys need? It was my attitude. Okay, what you want more of this? You want less of that? You want more shaking? You want more? I mean, I was more sit there to please to do the job than I was worried about how far it was going to go.
So you have your in-ring debut for WWF Superstars February 8th, 1992, and defeated Dale Wolf. You would come to the ring wearing a black top hat. You've got the skull that would billow out the smoke, the voodoo stick. You had the eerie music. It's dark. Here's the reverse shoulder break as the finisher. When you get done, were you happy with the look and the presentation of the gimmick? How do you feel?
Like I said, man, it's not like I knew what to expect going in. I just did the best that I could do with what I got, and that was it. I wasn't really thinking about, okay, I wasn't thinking ahead like that. I was more at the moment trying to do the job. Wasn't really worried about, okay, who am I going to work with next? Am I going to do the job? That wasn't in my mind. It was just at the moment trying to do the best with what I had to work with.
How did they go over any of the props? The smoking skull, the voodoo stick. Did they ever say, here's what you do if it's not working, or did they just send you out?
They had a guy named Richie that was, I can't think of his last name, but we had something called magic. And Richie was a magic guy and a prop guy. And so he just loved working with me because he got to make all these flares and stuff. Yeah, I'd come to TV, and Richie'd be like, whatever he called me, come here, come here, Godfather, come here. Because check this out, Papa Shango, come here. Look at this, and look at this, and I'm working on this, and look at this skull, and look what I did. And yeah, he was in charge of the smoke and all that, man. It was Richie from the place called Magic. But every time I'd come to TV, he'd have something new for me. And do this, and yeah, it was all Richie.
So for the next 2 months until WrestleMania 8, you are working as Papa Shango. You got the unique position of only working squash matches on television and not appearing on any house shows yet. So besides working the TV tapings every 3 weeks, what do you recall that you were doing in those early months of your WWF career?
I don't remember not working house shows from the very beginning, so I don't know where you got that. But I was working from the very beginning, and I was working with Tito Santana, and I was working with people like that. And they were trying to train me, but I wasn't sitting at home. I was working it, so I don't know where that came from. And
they're doing house shows early.
Back then, that's all you did was squash matches on TV. Nobody had serious matches. They made people pay for that shit. There wasn't no main event matches back then. Everything was a squash match.
Are you doing any kind of training in between? Any storylines and not just beating it up and, you know, you're beating up enhancement talent on TV? Or what are you doing week to week?
In the house shows, like I said, I'm wrestling with Tito Santana, and he's kind of teaching me the ropes and teaching me things. And, we're just learning. That character was so far out there, man. It wasn't like just coming in as a wrestler, man. I came in as a voodoo master. So we were working on the gimmick, and, you know, we were working on it.
So just to let everybody know, at this time in the WWF, early 1992, as you're breaking in, WWF was at the beginnings of a major scandal with steroid and sexual abuse charges against them and tons of bad press in the media and on TV. So I got to ask you, Godfather, did you notice that? Did that affect you in any way? Or were you just like, hey, man, I got to focus on me if I'm going to keep doing me?
When I got there, there was no mention of that. You weren't hearing about it. People weren't talking about it. It was something in the past. So it was, no. Nobody was, when I was there, nobody was talking about that. It was all over by then.
So lots of moving parts with all the titles changing hand, doing title changes on the house shows instead of TV to help build ticket sales for the future house shows. Lots of switching places, heel and babyface turns. Who are you starting to, at that point, you're focused on, you're doing house shows with Tito, but who are you starting to become friends with in the locker room?
Well, I was always friends. Me and Taker have always been really good friends. And then we started a group of guys called BSK, which was Rikishi, Yokozuna, the Godwin, Savio Vega, Crush, Mr. Fuji, Paul Bearer. And we were all guys that kind of watched each other's backs. And most of us got BSK tattoos. And then at nighttime, it was like me and Yoko and Taker. We were the topless guys. So we'd go to the topless clubs at night. And some of the guys would go with us, but we would go every night.
To let everybody know, the Rockers are popping off. Shawn Michaels and Marty Jannetty. They finally split up at this time when Shawn threw Marty through the, of course, barbershop window and began Shawn's long-expected singles push. Of course, Sensational Sherry is his manager later. Are you focusing on that? Ric Flair's winning a little rumble? What are you thinking? All this is big moments in wrestling history. Are you focused on that and kind of be like, I can't believe I'm here? Are you going, hey, man, I got to focus on me and do me to get myself ahead?
From day one, I have focused on me and me only. I only concern myself with what I'm doing or what I'm doing in the future. What Triple H are doing, what Shawn's doing, what Taker's doing, none of my concern, man. So, no, I always just focused on me. And I wasn't at home on Monday night. I wasn't at home watching wrestling to see all the matches and stuff. I would, of course, I'd take my bats. But, no, I was concerned about me and me only. I wasn't concerned about what anybody else was doing until I worked with you.
Did you have a steady producer by then, or were you kind of whoever you're going up against, or did you have a steady somebody, an agent, producer at that time, early 90s?
I don't remember. I think Chief J. Strombone was one of them, or Rene Goulet was one of them, Jack Lanza was one of them, but I don't remember one person just working with me, except, George the Animal Steel, like I said, he did all my vignettes.
Like we said, Ric Flair wins the Royal Rumble on January 19th, when you come in to win the vacant WWF title. It is originally announced on TV that Hogan would be challenged Flair for the title at WrestleMania 8. This is all storyline, as the actual main events are already planned out. Bret Hart loses the IC title to the Mountie at a house show. Who then loses it to Roddy Piper at the Royal Rumble. And, of course, all you wrestling fans will know at a house show on February 7th, the new team of Money, Inc. defeated the Legion of Doom to win the tag titles. And in reality, the LOD had been suspended and they had got the titles taken from them. What are you thinking then? Are you aware of all this backstage stuff is going on? Are you still?
The only thing I knew was happening when you said Money, Inc. Because at one time I joined up. I don't even know what it was called, but it was me, Ted DiBiase, Kate Von Bundy, and Tatanka, and we all wrestled the Lawrence Taylor, the football players. That's the only thing I remember out of it. Dude, I was not a mark for the business, like sitting at home watching wrestling. That's not me. So, no, I had no idea.
Let me ask you this. We're talking when you're making your debut. You're just debuted, of course. We're going to get to, again, I hope y'all tune in every single month. One, we're going to get better. We're going to mesh more. We're going to have more fun. We're going to get to more deep into what y'all remember of The Godfather and Papa Shango. But when you're there, early 92, and you're making your debut, on a night when you would show up and have a match, are you watching the rest of the show, then your match, and then watch it afterwards? Are you showing up, focusing on who you got a match with, going over them, doing your match, and going back to the hotel? What are you doing at this time?
I'm showing up to the building, finding out what I have to do, getting prepared, going to the gym, finding out the matches, getting with that person, working it out, getting painted up, and just concentrating on what I have to do. Not, once again, not concerned with what anybody else is doing except what I am doing. I am not watching other matches. I am not sitting at the curtain watching the menu. I am concerned about me and me only. I might watch Taker's match. Taker might say, hey, tell me what you think of this. And I'm so, or if somebody, if somebody were to ask me to watch the match, I would. But if you didn't ask me to watch, bro, I was too, you know, I was too busy about get back to the hotel room and then get to the strip club and get shit going at there, man. I'd have to, I would be, when I was Godfather, I would be at the strip club. Before the show was over, I'd be at the strip club already doing my thing, man, before the show was.
You're already there. Yes.
I'm already there.
Yes. That's what we need to hear. All right. Also, by the way, let me ask you this, Walt, since we're starting with Papa Shango. How long did it take you to get into full gimmick, paint, everything?
At TV, they would take a good 30, 40, 45 minutes to paint me up. But once they painted me up,
okay,
I would go into Papa Shango mode. And this, I'd be serious. I would paint up, like, if my match was at, say, 9 o'clock, I'd paint up at 8 o'clock, 7:30, 8 o'clock. And then I would go, because now I've already worked out everything with everybody. So after I would paint up, which would take about 45 minutes, I would find a corner, man, and I would sit by myself, and I wouldn't talk to nobody, and I would just sit there and just think about stuff. Because I was like I said, a biker, so it'd be hard to go out there and be a voodoo man just right off the get. So I would get into character, and I would just sit in the corner until it was my time, and then I would not talk to anybody. If I was working with you, you came and looked at me, I'd just look at you. I wouldn't even talk to you. But yeah, I took it real serious. So no, I was only concerned about me, nobody else.
Wow, you wouldn't even talk. So did any boys have any problems with that? Or they just went, hey, man, that's how he gets ready for a match?
If they did, they didn't say nothing to me. I mean, I guess if they did, don't say shit to me.
And to wrap up what's going on at this time, the first Saturday Night Main Event on Fox aired on February 8th with Sid Justice turning heel on Hulk Hogan in their tag match to begin their build to WrestleMania 8 with Hogan removing himself from the title match versus Flair to get revenge on Sid instead, which, of course, Papa Shango will make an appearance in, and we will talk about that next episode. Also, the Undertaker turned babyface to set up his feud and match with Jake Roberts at WrestleMania 8 when he saved Randy Savage and Elizabeth from a sneak attack by Jake Roberts backstage with a chair.
They weren't planning to move me along as fast as I got moved along. I got moved along because Sid quit. He forgot to do job. He didn't want to do the job for Warrior, so he quit. And I heard this is how the meeting went. What are we going to do? Who's got any steam on him? Only person who's got steam on him right now is the guy, our Papa Shango. Is he ready? We don't know. Let's put him in there. That's how it went. And I got when Sid quit, I got thrown into that spot. I didn't know I was in that spot to the day I go to TV and they said, okay, you're doing this. I'm like, what?
All right, we got so much to cover. This is going to be absolutely amazing. Month to month, retrospective for the Godfather. We're only a month into his career. We got plenty to go.
Oh,
and we're already getting super behind-the-scenes story we've never heard. You hadn't even took a rip on air yet. This is an hour.
Well, I'm trying to be nice. Let me get me started. We'll start slow and get there.
Episode 2, maybe we'll see a rig come out. I cannot wait to see month to month, man. This is going to get better and better, and you're going to get more involved in you. You're going to get more involved in your career. Everybody's going to be like, oh, yeah, I know exactly where we are. Man, this is going to get better and better every single month, man. We appreciate it.
We're going to have some fun, but I guarantee you there'll be more and more smoking coming up.
Man, thank y'all for joining. Hey, if you have any questions, if you have any comments, you just want word of encouragement, whatever it may be, whenever you see this episode drop us a line in the comment section. We'll try to get to those every single time we do a next episode. We're going to go month by month. We're going to keep progressing through your storied Hall of Fame career, Godfather. It's going to be a fun time. We're going to interact with the listeners. It's, man, I can't wait, man. I'm excited. I'm pumped. And I appreciate the opportunity to sit down with you at least once a month. And I go over your history to career, my friend.
We're going to have some fun. And believe me, it's going to get more. The further you go until you get to The Godfather, The Nation of Domination, man, it's going to get crazy. It's going to get crazy.
I can't wait. We have got a long way to go. This is just the beginning. A pod named Easy with the man, the myth, the legend, The Godfather. I'm your co-host, Cassio. We'll see you back here again next month. Thank you, Ad-Free Shows family, and thank you, Godfather. Appreciate you, bro.
Till the next time, my friend. Till the next time.